Ghost Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint, where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again for another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. And chronologically, I know it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to everybody out there as like far as like where the shows are falling and when they hear them, because we sit there and we talk about, oh, we're here, we're there, and then like an EPP episode is like it's our last one technically in the studio, but then like I know it makes no sense chronologically, but this is our first episode that we're recording here in our new studio. Now the EPPs will actually end up hearing the first released episode. Because this is like still a week or two out from actually hitting the air.
But this is the first episode we've recorded.
This is the first episode we've recorded in the studio. So here we go. I think the audio and everything is in good order. I took pictures in the old studio of all the equipment and where I had settings and all that. And any audio dork out there knows how just like one little thing off can be a mess up. But I've been playing with it the past couple of days. Everything looks good on my screen over here. Everything, I think, sounds okay.
I think it sounds okay. Do I sound okay to you?
You sound lovely.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
You sound like Celine Dion.
Never.
In the Titanic.
Sure.
I just had to start doing this. First.
Okay.
Within 3 minutes at the new studio, we got the new Titanic. There. But so there you go. We're set up. Very soon, I'll probably by the time this airs, we'll have done a Facebook Live and a little show of the new studio. Not painted yet. It's not really quite where we're gonna have it.
Oh,
but,
no.
But the pictures are up. Our big spooky pictures, and I have this lovely fan in here that looks. I'm gonna have some fun with it. It's kind of circa. What would you say? How would you describe this fan?
1995 shiny brass and super ornate
comes back to life. So what I'm going to do with that is I think I'm going to rust the hell out of it.
Yeah,
and it'll be real spooky looking. Then change some of the globes, but we have a lovely view now. It's lovelier than what we had at the old studio. We are like literally sitting in the woods.
Yeah,
telling ghost stories. We should do the shows at night again in here. Although I mean I really don't want to do that, but I'm just saying if.
Just for spookiness for us.
The spookiness of it, we could literally be in here at night, light some candles around here, and it would feel like we are in the woods telling ghost stories.
We are in the woods telling ghost stories.
We really are now.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. We are now, Branson, Missouri is where we are located. So welcome to the episode. It's your calls today at 855-853-4802. It's kind of odd because, I mean, like I said, consistent-wise, our audience, our shows have continued on for many weeks. But this is the first time, turn that off there. This is the first time we've actually sat down to do a show together in, I don't know, it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
It's 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, about that.
It's been odd, but you know, we had to do a certain number of shows ahead just so you guys didn't miss out just because our life was becoming crazy.
Sure.
So that's why today is our first one here.
Now back to the normal swing of things amongst unpacking a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So good times. Let's go to our first caller today here at Real Ghost Stories Online and get right into the ghost stories.
Hey guys, I'm Sarah from Utah, and I wanted to share my crazy little story with you. A couple weeks ago, I was sitting in my bedroom watching Bob Ross on Netflix, and I had my bedroom door open just a little bit, and I normally don't do that. And my room was dark, and the hallway was dark. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm watching Bob Ross on Netflix. And for some reason, I get the feeling that I need to look up at my doorway. And I'm sitting there, and I'm staring at the darkness into the hallway. And I kind of get this strange feeling, and I'm just like, this is so weird. If there was a serial killer sitting, you know, just beyond my door, I wouldn't be able to see them because it's so dark in my basement. And sort of out of nowhere, I see the figure of a man walk right past my bed, and I freaked out. Like, I've never freaked out before. Every single nerve on my body stood at end, and it just was the craziest feeling I'd ever felt in my life. And I don't really know what to make of it. I mean, there's been a lot of other weird things that have happened in my house, and my house is literally brand new. I've been living in it since November, and you know, it's kind of country out there, and there's not really much of anything that I know about the land or anything like that. We have some crazy faulty wiring, according to my mom. Our pantry light, which is motion detection, you know, like you walk in and you don't have to flip on a light, it has, you know, detects that you're there, and it turns on the light. The light turns on by itself frequently, and I tell my mom it's our ghost, and she brushes it off every time. And then there's been some strange noises happening in our house where it's like somebody's taking a cardboard box full of books and dragging it across the floor, and my mom has heard it, and I've heard it, and she still keeps brushing it off. And the other day we were out spreading mulch in our backyard, and my mom was facing the house, and she looks at me and she said, the pantry light just came on. And keep in mind, all of our pets, our two dogs and our cat, and my mom and my dad and I were all outside, so you can't, you know, say that somebody was in there. And it's just crazy, and I've been wanting to call you guys and tell you guys for a while. I wrote in a story about my peacock feathers a while ago. I'm quite far behind, so I don't know if you guys read it or not. But anyways, I super love this show. I listen to it all the time. It's what I listen to at work when I'm not listening to my true crime. But you guys are awesome, and I love you guys, and I'm going to become an EPP quite soon, probably as soon as I get home, because I'm driving home. But you guys are awesome.
I don't remember the peacock feathers, do you?
Not off the top of my head, no.
And that could just be me having a, you know.
I'm usually good about that, though.
Yeah, could just be a brain fart, though.
Is Bob Ross the paint guy?
Yeah, happy painter.
He's
painting happy little trees.
And I'm just curious, the episodes, because he's dead, correct? Mm-hmm. The episodes that are up there, like, when did that show end? When was, like, the last one?
It's very hard to know because he always had super curly 70s hair.
It just continued on, and you could. It's like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
You never know.
Like, is this an episode from 1978 or 1994?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're not quite. I don't know. Interesting. It's funny because, you know, I really didn't know a whole lot about, you know, Bob Ross, and I still really don't. But it's just it's interesting to me how Netflix can completely revive things.
Mm-hmm.
Just, and even that. It's like, who would have thought that would come back? And like, all these people are so excited now about it. And it's really neat. You know, it's like, it's like this whole generation that didn't even know this person existed is now back.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you really wonder, like, what else is going to come back at some point?
I don't think, though, what she was watching had anything to do with the ghosts showing up.
No.
And, you know, like we always say, it doesn't matter the age of the house. It could be something completely unrelated. It could be something tied to something within the house or the land. Sure. So you just never know.
It's interesting, like the sounds and everything that she was talking about, and especially like having an environment that's not exactly conducive to those sounds happening or objects around there to be making them, that really does start to make you wonder, like, what if nothing physically is moving, is it like a residual type type deal? I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, thank you for calling and being our first caller here at the new studio. So far, I have to say, no ghosts here.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. And there's lots of wood everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we are aware, because we've only like really been staying here during the day while we're working on stuff. But so far, so good. I mean, there has been that weird, I hear like a child crying in the other room every now and then.
That's our children.
That is our children. That's what that is.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of screaming. That's
still our children.
And then there's a fly in the house, and the one starts yelling, "Stupid fly, loser fly."
Yeah.
She thinks that by demeaning the fly. I just heard her in the. She heard me say that, and she just shouted it in the other room.
Yeah.
Should we have her come in here and do a stupid fly, loser fly?
Sure.
Harper, come here. Come in here, honey.
She's gonna demean the fly until it dies.
Yes. That's the way she thinks of how she can control something is emotionally beating it down. And she's three. Come here, sweetie. Come here for just a second. We're talking about what you do when you see a fly. Can you pretend you see a fly and say what you say to it?
Stupid fly, loser fly!
Now say it in a real sweet voice.
Stupid fly, loser fly.
Okay, there you go.
Okay.
That's Harper demeaning insects.
Yes.
So we're no longer, we don't need a pest control company or anything like that. We just need Harper to wander around.
She just started doing that on her own, just calling it loser.
And demean nature. It's like that old SNL bit where Will Ferrell was dissing your dog to keep it in line. And she just started doing this. Like, nobody taught her to call a fly a loser. I don't know where the hell she came up with it. And the first time she did it, I almost did a spit take. So I'm like, what the hell? So, anyhow. On to our next caller at 855-853-4802. Hi.
Hi there, Jenny and Tony. This is Sarah. I'm calling from Vancouver, Canada. Thank you so much for your podcast. I really enjoy hearing other people's ghost stories. I love the banter between the two of you. It's pure entertainment. And on a recent camping trip that we had to endure 36 hours straight of rain, all of your old podcasts and card games got us through that really bad trip. So thank you so much for that. The reason I'm calling is I have a hotel story for you. I know you love those. Years ago, I worked at a hotel here in Vancouver and was lucky enough to have an employee rate that I could use at other hotels in the chain. And at the time, my husband was a musician. He was finishing a European tour and had a few days off in Seattle before he headed off on his American tour for another month. So this would be my only chance to see him in about 2 months. So obviously, I was going to take advantage of that. I took the train down to Seattle, which is only about 3 hours away. At the time when I tried to book the hotel to stay at, the two properties I was familiar with and had stayed at were both unavailable. And the employee rate, however, was available at this one hotel. And I grabbed that chance and was stoked that I could use my employee rate. So I headed down to Seattle. I arrived first before my husband flew in from Europe. So when I arrived at the hotel, I even noticed a strange energy in the lobby. It was just off. I do consider myself sensitive. I can feel or pick up heaviness in the air, and it definitely had a weird feeling in the lobby, but nothing compared to when I checked into my room. The room was heavy. I did not feel comfortable whatsoever. I didn't feel alone. Half the wall was mirrors, which was strange because the decor did not match the updated, renovated decor that was on the website. So this is obviously an unrenovated room. Like I said, half the wall was mirrors, and I kept on making myself jump. So I would blame it On my reflection in the mirror, I obviously was super antsy, or I wouldn't have been so jumpy in the first place. I was so uncomfortable that I even left for a few hours to waste time until my husband's flight got in, because I didn't want to be in there alone. So he eventually got in. I think we went out for dinner, didn't get back to the hotel room till after midnight, and he didn't sleep at all. Neither did I. I was actually so scared in the room that I refused to sleep without the television on. My husband had lucid dreams. He doesn't really remember the details, but he usually sleeps like a rock. I can have the hair dryer on and the lights on in the morning and he doesn't budge. And he did not feel comfortable in this room either. So we tossed and turned, didn't sleep at all. And about 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, I woke up to my husband kind of taking a gasp, like, and woke me up, and I asked him what was wrong. And he said, "Why am I sitting up?" He couldn't figure out what was going on, but he was sitting straight up in bed with his arms crossed, and he remembers specifically going to bed with his head on the pillow. So total strangeness, and I thought to myself, that's my dog in the back having a nap, snoring. I said, there's no way that I'm going to be able to spend two more nights in this room. And when you stay with a hotel employee, right, you don't want to ruffle feathers. You're there as a favor. So since we deal with demanding guests all the time, I didn't want to start demanding to move rooms, but I knew I couldn't sleep in there for another two nights. So I did call the front desk. They were very accommodating, never asked why I wanted to move, said, no problem, come and pick up your new keys. We moved to our new room. I slept like a baby. It was comfortable. And he headed off on his American tour and I headed home. And it was back at work that I just happened to casually be discussing what hotel I stayed at to a coworker. And at the time, there was a gentleman there that was installing a new program. He was the company IT guy, and he had been to many other properties and interrupted and said, "Oh, Sarah, you know that hotel is totally haunted." And I said, "No, I had no idea." And I hadn't mentioned anything about my terrible night's sleep. I just said that I happened to stay there. And he said, "It's a really interesting story. You should look it up, because a woman committed suicide, and the detective that was part of the investigation could never figure out her identity. And it bothered the detective so much that they wrote a book about the situation." So, of course, I get online. I start looking up details. And the book is called, with the title, something Room 214, which is exactly the room that they checked us into, 214, on that first night that we stayed at the hotel. So the details are really interesting. There's lots of forms and people's opinions. There's a Reddit page about it. And years ago, this woman, as I said, checked into the hotel, 214, that's where she checked into. She gave a fake name, fake address, a fake phone number, and committed suicide in her room by drinking Metamucil and cyanide. So another detail that bothered the detective forever, because how did this woman get any cyanide? Or somebody must have noticed this woman was missing. She must have had family, or a dry cleaner, or housekeeper. Somebody must have noticed this woman was missing, and to this day they've never been able to figure out her identity. There's apparently a database of hundreds of people per year in America that are found deceased, and they can never figure out the identity. There was actually a website that talked about her suicide note, and her suicide note said, it was written on hotel stationery, "To whom it may concern, I have decided to end my life, and no one is responsible for my death. Signed, Mary Anderson. P.S. I have no relatives. You can use my body as you choose." So that was her suicide note, and there's lots of different links, and there's a Facebook group on trying to find out her identity, but for nearly 20 years, she has remained unidentified. You know, who was this woman, and what drove her to commit suicide? How did she get cyanide? How did she get the cyanide to kill herself? So many unanswered questions. So, anyways, I happened to forget a necklace there on my first trip, and I happened to be in Seattle a month later. I went to pick it up, and mentioned to the front desk clerk at the time my story about this room. She was kind of taken aback that they would have even put me in that room. They never check people into that room, but she said, you know, that's the very last room. If they're desperate, they'll use it, but they try not to use it ever. She wouldn't really tell me any other details about it, except one story that she experienced herself, where her roommate came to pick her up after her night shift and was sitting in the lobby. Like I said, it was a little creepy in there anyways, and waited for her roommate to finish her shift. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And then a hotel guest came from the hallway where the elevators are to the room and was sobbing, slobbing over and over and saying, oh, I feel her sadness. She's so sad. And kept on crying. And I guess this lady came over to the lobby, sat beside the roommate that was on the couch, and above her, the chandelier started moving back and forth. And then not simultaneously, but one by one, four different light bulbs exploded and popped above where the lady was crying, feeling this sadness of someone that was there. So anyways, to say the least, the front desk girl said her roommate will never set foot in that place again. You know, a janitor came and cleaned up the broken light bulbs, and that was the end of that. So that's my hotel story. I'm anxious to hear what you think about it and what you have to say. So take care, you two. Thank you for the awesome job, and I will be calling in again. I have other stories for you too. Thanks so much. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
I'm pretty sure it depends on the chain of hotels, but I'm pretty sure cyanide is right next to the Snapple in like the gift shops.
Yeah.
That's common occurrence, just so you know.
What an odd way to go.
I know. Ugh. Cyanide and what else?
Metamucil. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Is that like some sort of weird concoction that like, is it like you research this and this is, does this or like, I would think the cyanide itself would do the job.
Yeah. I don't know what the Metamucil...
Is it a pleasant flavor? I can't think Metamucil would be all that great by itself.
So being that this was like 20 years ago, I guess if there's no sign of foul play and mm-hmm. if they really do think it is just a suicide, that they don't do any DNA testing or anything? I mean...
I'm guessing a lot of that probably didn't exist at the moment.
Well, but 20 years ago, it'd be like 96.
Sure, but I think even some of that was still at the beginning.
Okay.
Of it. I mean, it's there, but I don't think it was anywhere near the level. It'd be interesting if they could go back, if the body exists, to do any of that today.
Sure.
To see where, if that leads anywhere, mm-hmm. anyway. But 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go over here to Mike. Hi.
How's it going? How's it going, Tony? How's it going, Jenny? This is Mike again from Cleveland, Texas. I called in. I believe my podcast, my story came out about a few weeks ago. Now, at least, it was about the demonic dream. Now, I have a couple of stories that follow on to that. Before that happened with the demonic dream, I was back in high school in those days. And I was in my room. I was in my room with my ex-girlfriend. So what happened is that my ex-boyfriend had passed away. He died in a car crash. And his grandmother would practice not witchcraft, but the ones that read your palm and all that. So, you know, one day she tells me that she still sees that ex-boyfriend, and he told me that he had told his grandma about it, and his grandma said that he's just protecting her, taking care of her. Well, that's the base of what happened. So what happened to me is that one day that we were in my room, we were just watching TV in my room, and I caught her staring in the corner of my room. She was just staring at the corner and laughing. No, not laughing, but like, you know, smiling and giggling. And I asked her, what's going on? Why are you smiling and giggling? And she said, he's right there. No, his name is Ray. He said, Ray's right there. He's making faces at me. And well, like, I believe any person would act. I got mad. And I said, you know, don't bring that stuff around my house. You know, and she apologized. She said, sorry, I won't do it again. Okay, whatever. So she ended up going home that day. And that night, same day that night, you know, I went to sleep like normal. And out of nowhere, you know, I was asleep, and out of nowhere, I get woken up. No, sorry. I didn't get waken up. I just woke up out of nowhere around 3 in the morning. I saw the clock, and it was around 3 in the morning. And there was a face in that corner, that same corner she was looking at. And it just had like a sarcastic smile to it, you know. And I brushed it off. I just wiped my eyes, and I turned around and looked back, and it was gone. All right, so I brushed it off and went back to sleep. The next day, same thing. I get woke, but this time I get woken up at 3 in the morning. But it wasn't just waking up to see a face. This time I got woken up by being punched on my lower back. And I got punched pretty hard, enough for me to wake up. You know, I woke up and nobody was there. I looked around my room, looked under my bed. Nobody was there. And just to let you know, it was just me and my parents that lived there. My brothers at the time lived in Houston. And at that time, I lived in Brownsville, Texas. So there was nobody around. And I get waken up by this punch to my back. Okay, so after that, nothing happened. I went back to sleep that night. Nothing happened after that night until that dream. That dream was the third thing that happened. So this last time that something happened to me was this year's Mother's Day, Mexican Mother's Day. I went to go surprise my mom. In Mexican Mother's Day, I believe this year fell on Tuesday. And I went to go surprise my mom in Brownsville. I live in Cleveland. I went to go surprise her in Brownsville, and you know, she was real happy and all that. So at the end of the night, you know, I started talking to her. I started showing her, yeah, this is where I saw the face, and this is where I got punched. And she tells me, yeah, she said that one time, not one time, but whenever we first moved in, she said, I came and laid down in the bedroom because I was tired. I was cleaning up the house. And she told me I clearly felt somebody get in bed with me. You know, it's like whenever you feel somebody stepping into bed. She said she clearly felt that. But she chose to ignore it, so she wouldn't give it acknowledgement. So she won't show that she knows that it's there. Okay, so that freaked me out. But that same night, I went to sleep late for some reason. I couldn't sleep. I went to sleep at 2 in the morning. And I fell asleep in the living room that day. And when I fell asleep, I've had sleep paralysis many times, many times. And but this time it was different. This time, yes, I had paralysis, but yet this was in a dream. I fell into sleep paralysis while I was in a dream. First time it's ever happened before. And whenever I slipped into sleep paralysis in a dream, you know, like normal, I was frozen. But this time, I got out of my body and saw my body just locked up, just frozen in a position. So whenever that happened, you know, I broke out of sleep paralysis. And like I said, I've never had a dream before. And usually whenever I break out of sleep paralysis, I'm awake, you know. So I was awake. Well, according to me, I thought I was awake. But in reality, I wasn't. So when I was awake, as soon as I woke up, I felt 3 tugs on my foot. And after the third tug, it dragged me across the room. After the third tug, I locked back into sleep paralysis, and it dragged me across the living room. Oh, man. That was the scariest feeling ever. Ever. That was just a horrible feeling. Kind of like on the paranormal movies, whenever a person gets dragged across the room. But that's exactly how it was. I got drugged across the living room, and I was in a sleep paralysis state where I could not move. So you can know that feels horrible whenever you're vulnerable and you're getting dragged across. So, okay, you're probably thinking right now, oh, it's just a dream. But no, the creepiest part about it is that what woke me up, what broke me out of that dream, out of that sleep paralysis, was that same punch on my back in the same exact area. They just punched me again. And it woke me up out of sleep paralysis. The way I took it is probably high. It's like telling me, hey, I'm still here. It was just one of the creepiest things ever. This was, I'd say, about a month or so ago on Mother's Day. It was a horrible, horrible feeling. Well, that's my story there. I appreciate y'all listening, and just letting y'all know, I'm listening to the ghost stories right now when I'm cutting my yard, and it's about 9:30 at night right now. It's just the right scenery for ghost stories. I just got my HID lights on my lawnmower, and I'm cutting the back 3 acres of my property. So it's just beautiful right now. Well, I appreciate y'all listening to me, and keep up what y'all doing. And I am a EPP, but honestly, I haven't heard not even 4 of the EPP stories. I'm only doing it just to support y'all. I'm trying to catch up to the stories, and then I will listen to the EPP. Thank you.
I don't know about dating somebody who says they still see their dead ex, like
a little awkward.
Like the dead ex is a third wheel. You know, I mean, I get seeing them from time to time, but
sure,
like laughing, like you're still interacting, like they're right there in the room. That's just gonna be awkward for you, you know.
An odd addition to the profile on Match for that.
Yeah.
Totally ready for the new relationship. Although I do still sometimes see my ex, who's dead.
Yeah.
May join us for a family comedy.
And I'm not, I'm not saying that that's bad or weird or anything. I mean, because, all we do is talk about people that see dead people. Sure. I'm just saying, ask him to, not go on dates with you.
Yeah. That's one of those things where, I mean, if it's going on, it's probably not necessarily asked for to have happen, but in order to move forward in your living life, that's maybe one of those things you have to, exactly what you just said, just ask, hey, please,
right.
Obviously, I cared about you when you were alive. I still care about you even though you're dead, but please care about me enough to let me move on, mm-hmm. move forward. So
that's a whole new level of let's still be friends.
That really is.
Yeah.
That really is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to Emily. Hi.
Hi, this is Emily calling from North Carolina. I'm going to try and relate a story that happened to me when I was 16. I'm 37 now, and I'm going to try and relate the story without rambling too much. So when I was 16, one evening I was out with friends and I came home late at night. It was probably midnight or 1 a.m. In the house where I lived with my parents. My parents were always light sleepers and frequently they would be waiting up for me. But when you came inside, if the lights were off, it was a strange older house. It didn't have any overhead lights in the hallway. So you always had to go in the front door, shut it, and go several steps, turn the corner, and the first door on the right was the bathroom, and that was your first chance to turn on a light and be able to see where you were going. So that night, I went in, shut the door. As I turned the corner that led to the bedroom, the hallway led to the bedrooms, and was about to turn on the light, I saw a man standing in the hallway. Initially, I thought, oh, maybe it's my dad. He's up waiting for me, or they heard me come in. But when I flipped on the bathroom light, the person was gone. This is just a couple seconds in which it happened. And then I realized that there's no way that was my father. He didn't look like my father. He was younger, looked to be a dark-haired, thin, not super thin, but well-dressed, fit man wearing a suit. But since I had just seen him for a second, I figured it was my eyes playing tricks on me. The next day, I had to go to work. And I looked everywhere. I worked at a hardware store at the time. I looked everywhere for my keys and my wallet, and they were gone. I knew that I had come in with them the night before, but couldn't find them anywhere. Tore up the house, looked all over the car, ended up getting some spare keys from my parents, went to work that day. Everything uneventful. Came home at night. But when I went to sleep, I had a dream. And in the dream, I just saw the man standing there. That was it. And that was the end of the dream. I do have a history of having very vivid dreams, so I kind of discounted it, thought that I was just remembering my eyes playing tricks on me. Night two, still have not found my keys nor my wallet. Looked everywhere. Went to sleep. Again, just saw the man standing there in my dream. And I asked him, I said, who are you? What do you want? And I woke up. Day three, again, no keys, no wallet. Saw the man in my dream. And I said, who are you? What's your name? What is it that you want from me? And he stood there for longer. The dream lasted for a little bit longer, but I couldn't get a response out of him. It was just, I don't remember anything else happening in the dream, just the man standing there. He was probably mid-30s, very well-dressed. I would say an Italian suit. You know, I could see him clearer in the dream than I did in the hallway. And at the end of the dream on the third night, I said, what's your name? And he said, Gavin. And I woke up. Day four, still no keys, no wallet. Ended up having a dream, and the man was there again. And I said, Gavin, what do you want? What are you trying to show me? And then I had a quick flash at the end of the dream, like an accident, a crash, just kind of chaos. Day five, and I may have been to work some of these other days as well, but I know on day five, I went to work, came home, and I had another dream, fifth night in a row, where it was Gavin, and I said, at this point I'd become convinced that he was trying to tell me something, trying to show me something, and I had more of a clear dream. He was standing there, and we walked along, I think, in nothing for just a little bit. He still didn't talk, other than to tell me that his name was Gavin. And then I saw a car accident, but I saw it from the perspective of another driver, a driver not involved in the accident. Like, I was driving down the highway, and then there was a terrible car crash in front of me. And the man in the suit was in one of the cars that crashed. My guess is that it was that he died in the accident. And I woke up very upset. I remembered the scene very well. Went to work that next day on day six. And I was at the front, I was working the front register at the hardware store that day. About halfway through my shift, some parents came in with a little kid. I would say he was about 3 years old, a young three-year-old. And they continued, they walked in through the front door, they continued towards the back of the store, and this kid just stopped dead in the middle of his tracks and stared at me. And he had dark hair. When I said, hi, how are you? I'm friendly to kids. And blank stare, he just stared at me. I said, hi, what's your name? He didn't answer me. And so, I'm trying to interact with the child. It was a small town hardware store. It wasn't I wasn't terribly busy at the time. And within a minute or two, his mom realized that her kid was not following her, so she comes rushing back up to the front of the store. Gavin, what are you doing? You have to come with me. And he told his mother. It was shocking to me because, now I've heard the name Gavin multiple times. It's not that uncommon of a name, but I don't remember ever having heard it before the dream and before seeing this child. That day, after my shift was over at the store, I walked out. And still with the spare key that my parents had, I walked out and I got in my car. It was an 88 Toyota Camry, not a big car, not very many hiding spaces. And as I got in and I sat down to start the car, I looked down right at the bottom of your right hand where the emergency brake is. On top of the emergency brake, in the middle console of the car, sat very neatly and plainly my wallet and my keys. And the car was locked, and it had been locked the entire time. And I have not had any dream or visit from Gavin since. I don't know, but at the time, I certainly felt that maybe I did something to either cause or could do something to avoid the car accident that Gavin died in. And I don't know if the boy was the same as the ghost, but it certainly seems so to me. Like I said, I was 16 at the time. I'm 37 now. That kid was 3 and was about 35 at the time. I still have several years to find out. But it has never left my mind, and I won't ever forget it. And It's just interesting. I'd like to know what you guys think. Thanks.
Okay, I kind of wonder if maybe she wasn't, you know, it wasn't made more difficult for her to, you know, drive her car by having to go get the spare key from her parents and everything, maybe to keep her from being in an accident.
Like it was more so to be preventative for her from being injured, not necessarily so much to foretell or warn anyone.
Yeah.
It was like, this is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
If whenever events don't hold you back, you will also be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that. I could see that. And I could see it also being very easily to misconstrue that as well. Where I think how she may be thinking some of this, where it's like, was I supposed to prevent this?
Sure.
From happening? Because if you have some sort of foretelling of, you know, a death,
uh-huh.
you know, and or you can, you know, relate that some way, you'd feel a certain level of guilt even though you're not the one who caused it. You know, it's just there.
Sure.
You know, so I could see that being very confusing and one of those things where, unfortunately, none of us will ever know the answer to.
No, but I'm wondering, because she was so young,
yeah.
if maybe that wasn't the thing. Because I know she mentioned, you know, did she inadvertently cause
mm-hmm.
that? And I don't think that's it. I think maybe this was somebody who had died in an accident coming to prevent you from being in that same situation.
I think more times than not, it is that. It's the preventative measure for the person who's experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly rare, at least in a lot of the stories that we've had, where it's someone coming to give you a message about somebody else. To prevent them from having something happen. It's usually very personal. It's usually very much about you. You don't, you know, stay back. I'm going to delay you somehow. So it helps you. It's really not necessarily about the other. But then inadvertently, you end up finding out about the horrible event that happened very close to where you could have been.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. Thank you for the call. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi.
Hey, Brewskis, this is Nick calling in from Colorado. I just have a quick story for you guys. So when I was growing up, these two girls lived up the street from me, and we got pretty close over the years just because we were so close in age and everything, and so we became pretty good friends, and when we were getting older, one of our friends told us that she was more sensitive than the rest of us. And at first we really believed her and we really wanted to, but then we kind of started thinking her stories were fake when she was telling us, like, that she woke up and someone was standing over her and that there was a little girl that sat in her back seat and, like, just all of this stuff. And we were kind of like, I don't know if I believe that. And then, but the more we would go to her house, the more we did start to believe her, because every time we were at her house, something happened. Like, we'd see some orbs or hear sounds or things would move. And one time I actually house sat for her, and it was probably one of the creepiest experiences ever. Like, I would hear things when I would go in there and just felt super uneasy the entire time, just wanting to get out of there. So, yeah, I never house sat for her again. But this particular story took place, I think it was our sophomore year, and we all were a little bored, and as teenagers do, we decided to get drunk on a Friday night, and it was just us three, and we were at the girl who claimed to be sensitive's house, and we were drinking a little bit and having some fun, and our other friend, she just got a little bit too drunk, so we put her on the couch to let her go to bed, and me and the other girl stayed up. We kept drinking and talking a little bit, but it came time for me to go home, and so I went upstairs with her to get some peanut butter and bread so that my breath didn't smell like alcohol when I went to face my parents when I got home. And we got the peanut butter and bread, and we came back down the stairs, and we heard our other friend, who was just previously sleeping, we heard her talking. Like, what the heck? So we get to the bottom of the stairs, we look over it, and she's kind of sitting up more, but still pretty slumped over a little bit, but she kind of has her eyes open, and we can just hear her talking. And what we hear her say is, no, stop. I don't want to do that. And then we waited, and there was about a five-second pause where no one said anything. And then she just goes, you're so funny, but no. Like, no, I can't do that. And we were just like, what the heck? And this kind of went on for about 45 seconds, and we just stood there, and me and the other girl were just in shock. And it was really starting to creep us out. We were starting to freak out a little bit. And then all of a sudden, the girl just stopped talking and lay back down and went back to sleep. And we were just like, what the heck? So we walked over to her and kind of started nudging her a little bit. And she wakes up, and we're like, hey, Britt, who are you talking to? And she goes, I was talking to Nick. And I look at her and I go, you weren't talking to me. And she goes, yes, I was. And I was like, well, what were we talking about? And she kind of just mumbled something and then fell asleep, and we couldn't get her to get back up again because she was just too chunky and tired, I guess. And so the next day, we actually asked her, we're like, do you remember talking to me at all? And she was like, no, she's a little bit too drunk. And so we never actually found out who or what she was talking to, and never figured out what they were saying. But just walking down in that basement and seeing her sitting there talking to no one, it was one of the creepiest experiences of my life. All right, well, thanks for listening. I hope you can use this story. Love you guys' show. Have a good one.
So do you think the friend was, like, half asleep and dreaming, or do you think that there was something there showing up as her?
It's hard to say in that situation. I've heard, and I think we've had stories on here before, of people who get, you know, inebriated to the point where there's drunk talk, and then there's, like, who the fuck is that?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a totally different person coming through. And there's stories of that where it's like, it's almost, you question if they're in the right place in the right time, and they're in that state, that does that open them up to being essentially a vessel for something to come through them? You know, almost a light possession light.
Yeah, I wasn't so much thinking possession as I was thinking maybe altered state of awareness to
okay.
where... she's still her, but she's picking up on other things that are around now.
Sure.
And that's not an uncommon type of practice. Some people seek that out on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of wondered, okay, is she half asleep, or is this
yeah.
actually something showing up and pretending to be the friend?
It very well could be.
Mm-hmm.
It very well could be. Thanks for that call. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's do one more call. Hi.
Hey, guys. My name's Tony. And I was a young 18-year-old college student going to Illinois State University in 1981. And three of my friends and I had a friend who was going to a college in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And he was able to get us five Rolling Stones tickets to the beginning of their 1981 tour. And basically he invited us out to come to the show, and we were all freshmen in college. And so we, my three friends and I, were all ROTC members, and so we had a vested interest in U.S. military history, so we decided to go to Gettysburg the day before the concert. And when we got there, we were coming in, it was late at night, and we're coming in off 30 into Gettysburg because we're coming from the east. And it got real foggy, and we started slowing down, and then a group of what looked like Confederate soldiers were crossing the path of the road. And so it was pretty freaky for us, and we didn't know if they were reenactors or what. And we got to the Gettysburg, and we asked them, they said, hey, are there reenactors going on or something like that? And they were like, no, there's no reenactors. The battle, you know, they don't do that on the battlefield or anything like that. I was like, oh, this is kind of crazy. And so we was chalking up and seeing a phantom apparition of Confederate soldiers. All right, thank you.
You know, if you really wanted to go around and screw with somebody, just dress up like a Confederate soldier and wander around the battlefields.
Yeah.
And or any soldier. And you can wander around there and really freak people out. Even better if you have on some sort of garb and have one of those hoverboards.
Oh, so you're
floating.
You're floating.
Essentially. But the hoverboard has to be like hidden so you can't see it. So I don't know how you'd actually do that. Maybe like really make your pants or something really ragged.
That would be
so
easier for a female to pull off wearing some sort of long dress.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that'd be great for Halloween, except I'd fall flat on my face.
That's true. Yeah, you would.
Yeah.
But I would too. So I really can't, I can't say I'd be any better at that. But I'm just thinking, you know, because I think the initial thought a lot of times is just that, reenactors, mm-hmm. you know, and then they, no, I don't really do that here all that much. It's more so we have the ghosts themselves.
Ugh.
But that would be, that'd be a creepy experience. It's kind of a, oh, okay, well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that that story. Appreciate that. 855-853-4802 is the phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. And I brought this along. It's here. It has survived the move. And bunk bed. There, I can say it now. I can ring it now, rather.
That would have been a feat to have broken that. But plenty of things were broken.
That's true. There was plenty of our crap that got broken. Luckily, I took the entire studio in my truck with me.
Yeah.
I literally I packed everything and said, they're going to probably break shit. And they did. But the stuff I got here, it's all survived.
It has.
It has survived. So there you go. That wraps up the show. If you like the show, please consider becoming an EPP. Sign up to be one at ghostpodcast.com. It's only $5 a month. Get all the bonus episodes of our show. At this point, around 100 of those for you. Some of our best content ever at ghostpodcast.com. Check it out. That is what fuels this thing and keeps us on the air. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.